to Oh Snap, a true crime podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Snap. I would like to add a content warning, trigger warning, disclaimer, however you want to phrase it. This episode does involve topics not suitable for children, such as sexual assault. If this is not something that you would like to listen to, please feel free to skip this episode and join me next week for a new case of true crime. In this episode, I'll be discussing Dani Rowling, the Gainesville Ripper who inspired the movie Scream. It is with great shame that I tell you all, I have never seen the Scream movies. Actually, there's a lot of movies I haven't seen. Off topic, but a very fun game my fiancé likes to play is ask Jen the name of a movie and see if she's seen it before. More times than not, I have not seen whatever movie is being quoted to me. In August of 1990, Rowling murdered five students during a burglary and robbery spree in Gainesville, Florida. Four of the five students attended the University of Florida, and the fifth attended Santa Fe College. Rowling would mutilate the victims' bodies, one was decapitated, then pose them, sometimes using mirrors. Early morning hours, Friday, August 24th, 1990, Rowling broke into an apartment shared by 18-year-old Sonia Larson and 17-year-old Christina Powell. Christina was asleep on the downstairs couch. He stood over her, but instead of waking her, he chose to explore the apartment. Upstairs, he found Sonia sleeping. He taped her mouth shut, then stabbed her to death while she tried to fend him off. Rowling went back downstairs to tape Christina's mouth shut and bind her wrists together behind her back, all the while threatening her with a knife as he was cutting her clothes off. He raped her, forced her face down on the floor before stabbing her five times in the back. He posed Sonia and Christina's bodies in sexually provocative positions before taking it upon himself to use their shower and then leave. Sonia's body had been pulled to the edge of the bed with her legs draped over, her arms were posed above her head, and Christina was posed in a similar position on the living room floor. The next day, Rowling broke into 18-year-old Krista Hoyt's apartment by prying open her sliding glass door with a knife and a screwdriver. When he realized he was alone in the apartment, he decided to wait in the living room for Krista's return. At 11 a.m. when Krista entered her apartment, Rowling surprised her from behind by placing her into a chokehold. After being subdued, her mouth was taped shut, her wrists were bound together, and she was led to her room. Rowling cut her clothes off, then raped her as he did with Christina in the same manner, forced her face down before stabbing her in the back and subsequently rupturing her heart. Her torso had also been cut open. He went to a campsite, but couldn't find his wallet, and he thought he may have left it at Krista's, so he returned. When he arrived, he decided to decapitate her and pose her head on a shelf facing her body to add shock value to whoever discovered the scene. Her body was posed on the edge of the bed, sitting up with her feet on the ground and her hands on her thighs. At this time, the murders made widespread media attention and many students began to take precautions, such as changing their daily routines and sleeping in groups to lower their chances of being attacked next. This was all happening pretty early in the fall semester, so some students withdrew their enrollment or transferred schools altogether. The last two Florida victims were Tracy Paulus and her boyfriend whom she was living with, Manny Tabuada, both 23 years old. Monday, August 27th, 1990, Rowling pried open the sliding glass door in the same manner he did at Krista's apartment. He first found Manny asleep in one of the rooms and after a struggle, killed him. Tracy heard the commotion and attempted to barricade herself in Manny's room. However, Rowling broke the door. He taped her mouth and wrists, cut off her clothes, raped her, then turned her over and stabbed her in the back three times. He left Manny as he was, but he posed Tracy's body before leaving. I feel I should mention all of the victims in Florida, with the exception of Manny, were small white brunette women with brown eyes. There were two suspects, one of which was a University of Florida student by the name of Edward Humphrey, who had a history of mental illness and bore numerous scars on his face from a car accident. This made him the ideal image when discussing the case in the news, and his photo was shown repeatedly by media outlets. Authorities publicly cleared him of all charges after Rowling's arrest. I am now going to discuss his crimes in Shreveport, Louisiana. Louisiana police reached out to Florida authorities regarding an unsolved triple homicide on November 4, 1989. Detectives concluded that there were similarities between the Gainesville murders and the murders of 55-year-old William Grissom, his 24-year-old daughter Julie, and his 8-year-old grandson Sean. The Grissom family was attacked in their home as they were preparing for dinner. Julie's body was mutilated, cleaned, and posed. A Florida investigator by the name of Don Maines traveled to Shreveport because of the similarities between the murders in each state. Both included posing the victims, tape residue on the victims' bodies, and vinegar used to clean the body. Don said body fluids from the Shreveport perpetrator were tested and found that this person had type B blood, as did the perp in Gainesville. He referred to the match to the Gainesville evidence as a revelation in the case. In November of 1990, shortly after Don's trip to Louisiana, a tip was called into Crime Stoppers about Danny Rowling possibly being connected to the murders in both cities. The caller, Cindy Jurisich, heard a news report on August 1990 about a string of murders as she was traveling through the Florida Panhandle. The report made her think of Rowlings, whom she met at her Louisiana hometown church, and his possible link to the murders in both Florida and Louisiana. Rowlings had said deeply disturbing things to Cindy and her then-husband, Stephen Dobbin. She said Rowling would visit her every night, until one night Stephen said he had to go. Stephen told Cindy that Rowling told him that he had a problem. When Cindy asked what type of problem, Stephen said, quote, "he likes to stick knives in people," end quote. Cindy dismissed the comments because she didn't want to believe Rowling was the one responsible for the triple homicide in Shreveport. Rowling told Cindy, quote, "one day I'm gonna leave this town. I'm gonna go where the girls are beautiful and I can just lay in the sun and watch the beautiful women all day," end quote. Hearing of the Gainesville murders haunted Cindy, so in November, she finally contacted the police to inform them of her hunch about Rowling's connection to the murders in both cities. Investigations began quickly regarding the tip, and Rowling was found to have been arrested September 7, 1990, for robbing an Ocala supermarket. The robbery was committed just 10 days after Tracy and Manny's bodies were discovered. Rowling was being held 40 miles south of Gainesville in Marion County Jail, and it was discovered that Rowling had type B blood like the suspect in the murders in both cities. Florida investigators realized Rowling had multiple convictions for armed robbery, so he could have been responsible for the bank robbery that took place on the day that Krista's body was found. In the evidence locker, there was the gun, screwdriver, bag of money, and a cassette player. They listened to the tape. They also found his tools matched the marks left at the Gainesville murder scenes. Investigators discovered his small one-man camp in the wooded area near campus where Rowling had been living. There, they discovered audio diaries he made which alluded to the crimes. In November of 1991, Rowling was charged with several counts of murder and was brought to trial nearly 4 years after the murders. He claimed that his motive was to become a superstar, similar to Ted Bundy. In 1994, Rowling pled guilty to all charges before his trial could begin. State Attorney Rod Smith presented the penalty phase of the prosecution. Court TV interviewed Rowling's mother during his trial from her home, in which his father can be heard shouting off camera. April 20th, 1994, Rowling was sentenced to death after being diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, and paraphilia. Shortly before the execution, Rowling claimed responsibility for the Shreveport murders. He handed his spiritual advisor, Reverend Mike Hudspeth, and Florida police a handwritten confession and apology. Rowling's last meal was lobster tail. He made no statement before his execution, but sang a gospel hymn. He was executed by lethal injection at Florida State Prison on October 25, 2006, after the U.S. Supreme Court rejected a last-ditch appeal, and he was pronounced dead at 6:13 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This crime spree inspired the script of the 1996 slasher film Scream. There are also many books, movies, TV episodes, and even songs inspired by Rowling in this case. I'll include my link tree in the show notes so you can follow my social media platforms if you'd like, or to give any case suggestions. You can also email me at osnapatruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. Please feel no obligation, but if you want to show your support for the show, I've created a Buy Me a Coffee for one-off donations in increments of $5, and a Patreon for monthly subscriptions that you can cancel at any time. The Patreon levels are Tier 1 is Third Degree Murder or Manslaughter for $5 a month just for general support. Tier 2 is Second Degree Murder, and it's $10 a month for general support and ad-free episodes. Tier 3 is First Degree Murder for $15 a month for general support, ad-free episodes, and a shout-out at the end of each episode. Also, I'm including access to my scripts for each episode. I've included these links in my link tree for ease of access. Until next time, my loves, snap out of it.
My name is Paige, and I'm the host of Reverie True Crime. Reverie means to daydream, but even daydreams can turn into nightmares. Join me as I tell you haunting and horrific reveries about missing people and senseless murders. I also interview survivors and people seeking justice for themselves or a loved one. New episodes come out every Monday morning, and sometimes you'll get bonus episodes on Thursdays. Wherever you're listening to this current podcast right now, you can find Reverie True Crime.